In 18th century America, information about a woman's life and accomplishments was very difficult to discover, but some women were avid letter writers or devoted journal keepers, and thankfully some of those letters and journals were saved. In her new book, Remarkable Women of New England, Daughters, Wives, Sisters, and Mothers, The War Years, 1754 to 1787, Carol Owens tells the story of Mary Gray Bidwell, Elizabeth Edwards Burr, Lavinia Dean Fisk, Abigail Williams, Sergeant Dwight, and many others. The war years changed the lives of each of these women, and their lives changed our new country. Carol Owens, it is a great pleasure to have you on the program. Congratulations on the book, and thank you very much for being with us this morning.
Well, thank you, Joe, for having me.
Well, it's a delight. What brought you to these remarkable women?
That's a very interesting question. The publisher did. I was trying very, very hard to sell a book on something that I thought was fascinating, which was courtship and marriage rituals in the 17 and 1800s. I thought that was so interesting.
I buy that.
Right.
Yeah.
My publisher said, you know, yawn, but since you're here, how would you like to do Remarkable Women? So I said, okie doke, define remarkable. And we started from there.
Excellent. So what was that definition of remarkable for you so that you could embark on this?
Well, that's a fascinating thing because I'm sure you've heard that writers and publishers always argue.
Yes.
So that was our first argument.
Oh, good.
Before the contract was ever signed. They said, well, you know, famous women, women that did outstanding things. I said, there weren't any. In the 1700s, a famous woman was an oxymoron. But I did find a wonderful letter where a woman wrote that it was her deepest wish to be notable. And then she went on to define notable. And Joe, a notable woman in the 1700s was one who was productive of goods and children and pleased her husband.
Well, right. But when you read the book, you could certainly say and make the case, as you do, that these women were powerhouses.
They were.
I mean, yes, I understand there's an antiquated definition.
Yeah.
But even put into our current society, these women are powerhouses.
Amazing. Amazing. I think the mistake that I don't want the reader to make is, for example, one student that I had once told me that she thought that this woman who lived in the 1700s was a feminist. And I said, my dear, she didn't have the word. She didn't have the definition. But their actions were precursors of the strongest women among us then or now. For example, a woman fought her husband in court for possession of a cow. Now, this is at a time when she had no standing in court. She couldn't vote. And more expressive than that, she wasn't allowed to own anything separate from her husband. But she needed control of that cow because he was a drinking man. And he would drink away any profit from that cow. Now, she wasn't trying to make a political statement. She wasn't a feminist. She was trying to feed her children.
One of the things that I made note of immediately, and the way the book is broken up is fascinating, because you look at the four corners of a woman's world, the homestead, the church, the village, the social circle.
Right.
And that's one of the ways that you break it up. And that's fascinating because that's a different context. It's not, here is this person and what they've done. This is this person in this particular context.
Oh, bless your heart for saying that. Thank you, Joe. You know, I listen to you religiously, and I love your book reviews because you're such a careful reader. And what you've just pointed out is like the soul of the book, that I want people to understand these women in their context,
yeah,
not ours. And they lived in a very small world.
Now, we should note, and I want to get back to that in just a second, but we should note that in many cases, these women were the wives of very accomplished men.
Indeed.
So that has some bearing on where they are at a certain place in time.
Yes.
I.e. the wife of Aaron Burr.
True.
Okay. So with that said, but there are some exceptions to that rule in the book of women who did not have that. But it's fascinating to see, for example, the church of we talk about it so much now about religion and its impact, and looking at the impact that these women had with the church and with that guiding influence is really fascinating.
Yeah. And it was reciprocal. Their role was defined, yes, by their men, by their fathers, their husbands, but it was also defined by God. I mean, and that's pretty powerful. The church was telling them how they should behave in society, but in turn, as you point out, they were having a tremendous impact on the church and where it eventually went.
This is probably a question I should have asked you at the very beginning, but what led you to these particular women?
Literacy in the 1700s in America is much higher than anybody would guess if I just asked you to make a cold guess.
Yeah.
But having said that, who was literate? And they had to be literate for me to pick them. So you point out that they were the wives of prominent men. Yes, they were also the daughters of prominent men. They were of a socioeconomic class a step up. And that made them literate, and that also encouraged them to write letters, keep journals, and that's the only way I have their stories, except if they got into the court system, if they got divorced, if they sued their husband for possession of their cow, like the Widow Bingham, the Red Lion Inn in Stockbridge, the Widow Bingham. Got involved in the whole court system because she wanted a license to sell liquor at what has always been the Red Lion Inn. And they had never given a license to sell liquor to a woman. So she got embroiled in the courts, and therefore there's documentation of what happened.
Hmm.
So one way or another, they were selected for me by who left a paper trail.
And in that paper trail, is it biased? If you are looking at a divorce, and is it somewhat biased against the woman, or not?
Well, divorce laws were certainly biased against the woman,
right? But the paper trail.
Well, yeah. My goodness, that's an insightful question. You know, when you read the paper trail, you can see the prejudices and the restraints of the day just in how they worded things, not just in the position that the courts took, but the man could do the same thing that the woman had done, and it was practically criminal if the woman did it, for example, adultery. Mm-hmm. And not frowned upon quite as deeply if the man did it.
Talk to me a little bit, and this is a different situation, but talk to me a little bit about Lavinia Dean Fisk. She was widowed,
mm-hmm.
then gets married again.
Yes.
And boy, that doesn't go over very well.
You know, that's such a fascinating story. Sometimes when I'm asked to give lectures, I pick Lavinia because people really, her story resonates. It doesn't matter that it's a couple hundred years later. What happens is she's a widow with many children. She is not a poor widow. She is situated. She's also not rich. But she's a young woman, and she meets this man, John Fisk, that the entire town has selected as their schoolmaster and superintendent of their three-school system. So this is a man that everybody respects. They find each other, they marry, and everyone turns against the marriage. All of a sudden, John Fisk is not the respected teacher that they've hired only just a year before. He is now immoral, and she should not have married him, and she is excommunicated. And
from the Congregational Church.
By the Congregational Church. And unwinding that change in opinion, why everyone turned against them, what happened to them in their town, and what happened to them after they were forced to leave that town, is a fascinating story. And it tells not just a great deal about a woman's life, but also, as you said earlier, about the whole context.
Carol Owens is the author of the new book, Remarkable Women of New England, Daughters, Wives, Sisters, and Mothers, The Warrior, 1754 to 1787. So that time frame gets dictated to you by the war and by, I assume, the paper trail.
It's from the French-Indian War to Shays' Rebellion.
Yeah.
And I wonder how they teach history in the school these days. But those were...
I hear it's great.
But, you know, those were such turbulent years. And there was a war practically ongoing for that 30 years. And let me tell you, Joe, that war was not over in East Asia someplace. It was in your dooryard.
Yeah.
It was in your barn. And you read about these women picking up a gun to defend their household or whatever, and you think, how unusual. Not real unusual. The enemy was right outside the front door. So they were forced to, and they did.
I was thinking about when I was reading the book that we have such a social media culture where if we go to the store and we get something, we put it on Facebook and tell people, oh, look, I bought soup. And we want some amount of credit for that.
Yeah.
These women were not about credit, nor did they. So we call them now remarkable women. And we say we spotlight them as remarkable. But it's safe to say that they certainly didn't see themselves that way, nor did anybody else.
That's correct.
And that's a very so to do that without the nurturing, if you will, of getting some sort of praise for what you're doing.
Oh, and to do it in spite of the resistance,
right,
of the people around saying, why in the world are you doing this? No one else is doing this. Why are you?
And what do you think we learn from that?
Oh, gosh. Do you remember so many years ago, what was that book, Joe, about being inner-directed and other-directed?
Oh, right.
Yeah.
I know what you're talking about.
Somebody is going to write in or call
in absolutely.
And tell us. And it was a wonderful book. It was very, very interesting. It talked about the motivations of people. And I think these women were very inner-directed. I think they had very small personal lives. There wasn't any possibility that they could run for office or win an office or be famous or have any personal power, really. And so they had to be doing what they believed to be right. And as you said, in spite of resistance and in spite of nobody praising them.
Were the you may disagree with me on this. In some cases, yes; some cases, no. But I was expecting the men to their husbands to be jerkier. I mean, in some cases, it's from central casting, and they're pretty jerky. But not in all cases.
No, and I think they're men. Gosh, here's the thing. If we judge them in terms of our standards, which is a mistake I think people make when they're reading history, and I wish they wouldn't make it, then we'd say, how could that man have done that? How could he have said that? But in terms of their times, these men were acting appropriately.
We are out of time. I could talk to you for another hour, but the book is beautiful. It's Remarkable Women of New England, and it is by Carol Owens. Carol, thank you so much for joining us, and best of luck with the book.
It was a delight, Joe.
Beautiful
thank
job.
You for having me.
You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.